All right, everyone, new season, new coach, new club, new offices. We're here at the new Jets offices at Transgrid next to Rayward Oval. And we're very appreciative and very honoured to be joined by the new Jets coach, Ernie Merritt. Ernie, welcome to the Jetstream.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here. And if I can engage with the fans more and more, that would be a good thing.
First question off the bat, how are you settling in? How are you finding the facilities and just the overall Newcastle vibe in general?
Well, it's the first year I've gone without a winter in Australia. I'm living in Melbourne for most of my time over here. I just love the weather here. It's just been great. The town is nothing like people, or I imagine it, and I hear this story often. It's not a BHP town. It's not really an industrial town anymore. It's a thriving little place which has got great restaurants and bars and a beautiful winery just up the road in the Hunter Valley. And I'm a fan of Australian beaches, and I had no idea you had so many beautiful beaches all the way out to Nelson's Bay and Redheads. And in fact, I've got a book of beaches, and one of them's in the book, Fingal's Bay. Yep, so yep. I love the place, and I certainly enjoy the weather and the people.
Well, it's certainly not as, and the best thing about the beaches up here, they're not overpopulated like the beaches in Melbourne and Sydney.
No, and you can basically try a new one out a week.
I suppose that just to kick things off, the first question I had was just comparing your time at Victory and at Wellington. How are you finding the club set up, the training facilities, and just the way everything works? But the differences between obviously a major club like Victory has a lot of money spent on behind the scenes. Probably one criticism, I suppose, that gets levelled at some of the regional clubs is they're sort of trying to do things on a bit more of a budget. How are you finding the differences between your time across the three clubs, I suppose?
Well, first of all, I certainly enjoyed my time both at Wellington, Phoenix, and of course at Victory. I was at Victory for 6 years and 3 years at Phoenix. And a lot of people assume that at Victory we had those facilities from day one, but it was actually the third year before we actually moved into Amy Park. So before that we were moving around different school grounds, predominantly Melbourne High School's Melbourne Grammar's training facility. The Amy Park now at Victory is outstanding. Wellington Phoenix didn't have terrific facilities, but after I've left, they've now got a new training area which apparently is very good. So when I came here, we do all our work, of course, during the week. You see the result of that for 90 minutes at the weekend, but the work has to be done during training during the week, and I'm really happy with the facilities here at Newcastle University. The two pitches are first class. The groundsman does a great job. We have now the shared offices here with Transgrid, so the players can come up at any time. All the staff are here, and it's sort of made us more of a group rather than two groups. So it's one group, and adding on to that, having the women's team coming in and the academy, Newcastle Academy. So I think this club has got the setup, the staff, and the facilities to do very well.
How are you finding the levels of staff in your coaching department? Is there maybe areas of opportunity to get more, I don't know, ancillary roles, dietitians and, psychologists, sports therapy, all that sort of stuff? Do you find that the staffing levels are adequate to do what you need to do, or do you think that down the line there might be more opportunity to bring more of those on board?
There's no doubt the bigger clubs have the finances to have an extensive staff, and I had that at Victory. I have had a similar setup here at Newcastle. I had a similar setup at Wellington, so what you have to find is staff that not only work very hard but can cut across a range of activities and sports. We've got good coaching staff and more than enough coaching staff. It's more the support services. Regarding psychology, I think I'm the number one psychologist at the club, and I really believe that my interaction with the players in that area is crucial. We have Chris Smith, who's strength and conditioning and sports science. He does a great job and works ridiculous hours, and the same way our physiotherapist, Justin. Instead of having two physios, we have one, and Justin works really, really well in that area. So I think we've got adequate staff. Down the track as we grow, I'm pretty sure we'll extend staffing should we need it. But there's no reason why we can't perform well on the part with the quality of the staff that we have. Very happy with them.
Cool. Well, I didn't realise I'd stolen one of Evan Hayes' 5's questions, but that's there you go. That's one of the first questions out of the way from one of the supporters. So, Dave, you want to kick into some more?
Yeah, look, the next question we'll ask from is from Stanny CFC Jet. He's looking at the flexibility within the tactics for the team and said that some of his observations from previous management structures was he didn't feel that there was a plan B or a plan C to the plan A.
I have to tell you, this idea of a plan A and a plan B, I've heard it so many times, it really is journalists that bring it up. There is no plan B, but I can maybe explain myself a little bit there, having been coaching for 30 years.
Put it to bed.
there's two things that we are accused of. One is tinkering, and one is not having a plan B as coaches. First of all, I don't tinker. Mm-hmm. I adjust. So we have an overall game plan in it, which is a philosophy how we want to put. We're either going to be an attacking team, a defensive team, or a counter-attacking team. We're either going to be full of ourselves and proactive, or be a bit intimidated and be reactive. But we have a style of play, and we are going to get in people's faces. So up front, we're going to take risks. It'll cost us goals at the back, and sometimes we'll lose badly, but we're going to play with a style of football where we want to win every game. We're not going to win every game, but we want to play to win. We're not playing away from home for draws, etc. Mm. So you're each week, obviously, the team that we play against has a slightly different strengths, weaknesses, etc., maybe a different formation. So you have to adjust, not tinker, the way you play. And there are always two formations. There's the way you attack when you have possession of the ball and the way you're going to play to your strengths. But you have to have a formation similar to the opposition's team when they attack you, because if there's an extra fullback coming forward, you have to cater for that, and your formation really is very similar to the formation of the team coming at you so you can win the ball. You do, however, there's little tricks where you can force them not to use their best players or their best wing and that type of thing. So there are adjustments. Plan A is, this is the way we play. Plan B is, it's not working. So you've got to change things during the match. If a midfielder is having a howler, either change his position slightly or bring on another midfielder. If we're not getting success going through the middle, go wide, change things. But there's no sudden, right, forget everything you've been working on for 15 weeks, that's all out the door. Now we've got a whole new plan, a piece of paper, and now you know the limited intelligence of soccer players. We're all the same, we're soccer players. You have to ingrain a plan into their heads and then adjust it. Find out in the pre-season who can play where. Maybe I can switch someone from a right side wing to a left side, or a midfielder that can play as a defensive back line player. But you're always adjusting it, and I think being able to do that in real time takes coaches 2 or 3 years to learn. It took me about 10 years. Mm. But real time, when everything's happening, it's frenetic. You're getting pressure from everyone. Mm. You're down 2 goals, 3 goals. But I've come back. In fact, I remember coming back against, that was Laurie McKenna, that coach of Mariners, and we were down 2-0. We finished with 9 players, and as victory coach, we finished up drawing 2-2 through making adjustments and taking risks. But this is going to be a team that takes risks. Yeah. The plan A is, plan A stands for attack. There is no plan B.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's more, I suppose he's probably fallen into a bit of journalistic speak there, but I suppose it was more directed at how are we going to adjust ourselves during the game when we see that what we're trying to do isn't working. So I think that's pretty much
I think I'll give you another coaching label, a rotator and a non-rotating the squad as well. Rafa Benitez used to always get labelled with he rotates his squad, he always rotates. That's probably the tinkering.
Claudio Ranieri, the tinker man.
Anyway.
Mm. Well, it's different in the English Premier League, or in because they play 50, 60, 70 games, including cup games and internationals. So you cannot, in the old days, there was one substitute, and I remember Liverpool getting through a season virtually with 13 players. So those old days have gone. Now in the big leagues, they've got to have quite a few first-team players ready to go.
Cool. Do you want to ask your question, Dave?
Oh, sure. Look,
some bloke called Dave?
Yes, that's me. I'm going to take you back a few years, actually, Ernie. Season 2, 2006, 2007. the victory were defeated 4-0 in the last round 21 here at Hunter Stadium. And it's always, at that stage in particular, always seemed that the victory's bogey side were the Jets. It's something that I've always wondered personally, and what would have happened if the Jets had defeated Adelaide in the preliminary final. They lost in a shootout that year and made to the grand final, and history shows that your team went on to win 6-0. So, my question, what do you remember about that 4-0 game, and were you happier to be playing Adelaide instead of the Jets?
I have nightmares because of the time Newcastle beat us 4-0 leading into the finals. In fact, I still sleep with the lights on and I've had counselling. I always had trouble coming to Newcastle to play when we were at Victory and also at Phoenix. I always found this a very tough team to play against when Newcastle were at home. That particular game, you have to remember though, I had dropped several players because we'd wrapped up the Premier's play, you know, two-thirds of the way through the season. Mm. I dropped several players. I couldn't get Kevin Muscat to sit on the bench. He got a yellow card, nearly got a red card. In fact, on the day, he should have got a second yellow card for walking off the pitch. I was at the side of the pitch saying, Kevin, you've been yellow carded, come off now. He refused to come off. And he nearly cost us big time. But before the game, the FFA, in their wisdom in those days, with rules are rules and we always do it this way, and when we stuff up, we're going to stuff up properly, the FFA presented our Premier's plate at that game. So they presented the Premier's plate before the game. We got, not in front of our own crowd, we got booed to death. We were flat as tacks because everybody was thinking of the finals. I had two players that I wanted to get, anyone with a yellow card that didn't play. We had an average team out, but on their day, Newcastle was just far better than us and deserved the win. But it was good for us, because what it did, it just gave us a kick up the backside and reminded us you got to play at your best every week. There's no switching on, switching off. And as you say, we went on to win the grand final 6-0.
Were you happy not to face the Jets in the grand final? Or were you happy to face in Adelaide?
Sorry? I think that year we could have faced anyone. We just had a team that was buzzing. We had a midfield that was, you know, two defensive midfielders in Brebner, Muscat, Fred is the attacking midfielder, Archie was on song, Danny Alsop couldn't do anything wrong, Roddy Vargas at the back, and Adrian Lear was just outstanding, Nick Theo in goals. I could tell you every part of that game, it's in my memory. But we could have beaten anyone on the day, and 6-0 was lucky, it should have been 10.
Yeah, well, as I say, mostly it was Archie Thompson running away to celebrate. Yeah. That was pretty much the game, but anyway, exactly. Thank you for answering that.
All right, now we've got a whole bunch of questions from PV4. What I might do is I might just grab this one to talk about our new number 10, Ronald Vargas. In your time, you've coached some absolutely wonderful import players, Carlos Hernandez, Fred and Rolly Bonavarts, you come to mind. How does Ronald Vargas compare? And just as a general sort of point on him, how have you found him since he's rocked up? A lot of the criticisms when the Jets have signed overseas players is they've rocked up not necessarily very fit. Players have not played very much when they've come here. We've picked up players on the cheap that have been, shall we say, had injury problems or not settled at the clubs that we've managed to pick them up from. So how does Ronald Vargas compare from the short time you've seen him compared to those other imports? And just overall, how is he settling in, and what sort of player is he?
First of all, I've had some success with signing overseas players, but I've had some failures as well. Often the failures arise because you haven't been able to find out a bit more about the personality of the player. Nowadays we have Y-Scout software, which means that I can watch any professional game anywhere in the world 48 hours after it's been played. So now you can do enormous research on a player. I was handed a large list of players from Joel and Laurie. They deal with the agents, and they said, which ones do you want to put in the shortlist? So we created a shortlist. Ronnie was at the top of that shortlist, but on our first approach to him, we just couldn't afford him. So we went with a Brazilian who turned out his wife was having problems with the childbirth, and that fell through. We had another one whose name came up, Rodriguez, but Joel was the most persistent one here. We went back to Ronnie Vargas and he got them over the line. I had put together a video of what I wanted from a player. I put together, a profile, and then I looked at his videos to see if he fitted into that profile. Now, number 10's got to be a ball winner.
Yep.
He's got to be able to control possession really well, not give away the ball under pressure, but he's got to be able to work in those very dense areas just outside the penalty box. He's got to be able to score, create, set other ones up for goals, and the icing on the cake is take free kicks and corner kicks and be a dead ball specialist. Mm. Ronnie Vargas takes all the boxes, every box, so he was at top of our list, no problems. The side we wanted to find out about was really his personality, and so I contacted the goalkeeping coach, Jonathan Gould, at West Bromwich Albion, and Jonathan worked with me as a goalkeeping coach at Phoenix.
Yeah.
He's now Premier League goalkeeping coach. And I said, Jonathan, can you speak with Rondon, the Venezuelan striker that you use in the English Premier League, and get some information for me on Ronald Vargas? He did that. Rondon spoke very highly of Ronald, and so that was a big tick there as well.
Mm.
Since he's been here, he's looked after himself. He's cut. He's physically very fit, but of course not match fit.
Mm.
He hasn't really played much football in 3 months, but he's coming on leaps and bounds. He's all of we thought he was. It was funny. I was talking to Roy the other day, and he says the three up front are Andrew Nabut, Roy, and Dimi Petratos, and he sits in behind and sets them up, but they don't know whether they're going to get a pass or not, because he looks one way and passes the other.
Yeah.
And the way Roy was saying the other day, he says Andrew Nabut makes a run thinking he's going to get it, and then he pulls back, and then we thought it was going through to Dimi, and it hits Andrew in the back of the head. He got the shock of his life.
Yeah.
But his passing capabilities, his deception, his ability to take on players that close them down is first class, and I think he's a very special signing. Whether he plays in the first game or not,
that was to be my next question.
Well, he'll play a part in the game, he'll be in the squad, unless there's any chance of injury, because if you push someone too hard, too early, you finish up with a torn muscle.
Mm.
So, if provided the physio and the strength and conditioning coach clear that side of things, and he's certainly training well, he'll be a part of the squad, but I'll leave it to the last minute before I decide whether to start him or not. But he's everything we expected, and I think you'll be very impressed.
Next question is actually a similar one from both Tommy Jett and PV4. PV4.
The guys all have these funny names, or
they're online nicknames, so they don't have to give their real names. But
we know who this guy is.
He's a very occasional podcast contributor, and that's a definite dig.
And he's actually a closet gypo too.
Yes,
as in Mariners.
Yes,
he's a closet Mariners.
He lives on the Central Coast. Okay. It's a definite source of needle.
Anyway.
Right.
They're both looking, wondering about our resources at striker. Roy's really the only recognised striker. Andrew Nabu has had experience playing centrally. Is that an area that possibly concerns you should an injury arise? Or what options do we have coming through that could avert any formal injury issues?
Well, depth is crucial. Depth, experience and depth is crucial, and I think that's why Sydney and Victory made the final last year. They're two very good teams and they've got really good depth. Although Sydney went through most of the year without hardly changing a player because they hardly had an injury or a suspension. I'm the type of coach that goes, should I get this player who's very high quality, or should I get two players of less quality? And I always go for the high quality player. And that's what I've done with Fred and Carlos in the past, Brebner. We've got three. I like the front four all to be goal scorers. They must be goal scorers. So they create for each other and score. So in front of Ronald, we have, as I said, Dimi Petratos, Roy centrally, and on the left, Andrew. And at the moment, we've got three youngsters backing those boys up. So Costa plays, Costa Petratos, Dimi's brother plays central. Mario Chabau and Joe Champness play in either wing. Joe is the one that's been shown he can score goals.
Mm.
Costa is a hard-working player, and Mario is a very clever player, technically very good, that can dribble. So those three, we're going to take a risk on them, those boys being our backup. But Andrew can play central as well, so we can put one of the boys in a less challenging position, because that high position is a very tough role. You really get two players on you all the time. So I think we've got enough backup, and Joe Champness has scored goals in the last three games that we've played, coming off the bench and starting one game. So pretty happy with those youngsters. And when you have a budget, and then our boss Martin Lee, our owner, gives us more money so that we can get Ronald Vargas over the line, I'm certainly not the type of coach to ask for more money again. We have what we have, and I think it's a very good squad.
Cool. Now, just with regards to the squad, another question from PV4. You've got one squad spot still available, or potentially a second, if you can move on some of the players that aren't necessarily featuring. What would be the ideal positions to fill with these remaining squad spots? And I suppose, as a sort of a supplementary question, are we looking to move on any of those players that aren't necessarily looking, not necessarily featuring in your plans? Have you come in? Because obviously, when a new coach comes in, a lot of the squad's already been signed. Not necessarily all of those players are going to fit in with your philosophy and style. It's just, you know, it's just the nature of the beast when it comes to football. Things that come to mind is Devante Clute has been a player that the Jets supporters have been very high on, but has really struggled to make an impact and to feature in a number of coaches' plans. And obviously Dan Alessi has been one that's been mentioned in the question as well. Are there any players that we're looking to possibly move on over the next couple of months, or maybe for January, to bring depth into the squad? Or are you pretty happy with? Because obviously, also the other point is that there's also a spot possibly earmarked for a Chinese player, but obviously that hasn't looked like it's been close to getting filled there at this point in time. Obviously, not looking at finding the right player has not really eventuated by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I'm very happy with the squad that we've got, and we've got one spot available, and we've got two visas available as well. So we're in a very strong position, and I usually aimed at the January window to have an the option of bringing in a player then. I would never discuss any player publicly, whether yep. they were going to stay or go, but I always individually speak with players that I think are going to struggle to gain team match time. To give you an example, in the second year I was at Victory, we had a very talented under 20 Australian player, and but he was a midfielder. He was never going to get in our midfield, and Victory had not only good squad members in the midfield, but they had depth as well. So this boy is too good to waste. So I phoned Ricky Herbert and I said, look, there's a boy called Vince Leah here. I think he would do a good job for you. Yeah. Vince played for 10 years at the Phoenix, and now he's gone on to Adelaide. Mm. So I think it's important to help them move forward in their career. If they don't get game time, they're not going to move forward.
Yeah.
And sometimes they have to go downwards to NPL1 and then come back up. And last year I signed 3 NPL players for Phoenix. So I think this under 20 rule is not a good rule. It should really be under 23. They're too young to make it under 20. One or two might. So yes, we've got one spot available. We've got two visa spots available. I'm very happy with the squad. Regarding the Chinese player, Martin Lee has been very clear to me that he would like to have a Chinese player as a part of the business model. I agree with it. He wants to upskill a player to go back to China. He wants to upskill coaches, upskill them, and I'm happy with that as well. Mm-hmm. I don't have to play any Chinese player in the first team if I don't want to, and I get to select a player, and I've been choosy as I did. I was choosy with Ronnie Vargas. So that'll play out eventually, and I'll get the player that I want. But our fans should be aware, it's for my credibility and the club's credibility, only the best starting 11 that we believe can do a job will be starting. There won't be anyone in there as a token player.
Yep.
And I have to say, dealing with Martin Lee has been first class, and going over to Shenzhen was the best thing I could do to meet him.
Yep.
And so I'm very happy with the squad we've got.
Is there currently a short list of any Chinese players that you're looking at, or
we have a couple of people in China doing that for us? Okay. Yes, and then they've sent over a few profiles. One or two we might have a look at, but it'll probably be a young player, up and coming young player who gains the benefit of hopefully good quality coaching here and working with good quality players around them, senior players.
A similar approach, I guess, taken back in the day with Song Jin-yong.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Full player from the K League.
Yeah.
He was a very good player. I tried to sign him at Victory. I don't know where he is now. Where is he now?
Qatar. I think he's in Qatar.
Yeah.
Or he's either in Qatar or back in Korea.
Yeah. So it was a good move, that. It was a good move.
Yeah. Mm. He was a great player.
Well, look, we'll stick on the squad then. Coming to the club, have any players pleasantly surprised you in terms of their ability?
There's a lot of them surprised me and impressed me. And I don't think Ivan will mind me. telling you the story about Ivan.
Yeah.
I watched Ivan play a lot of games last year. I watched a lot of videos before I took the job on. And recently I spoke to Ivan and said, Ivan, you were the one who was, unfortunately, that was going to get moved on. But I decided to give you another chance. And he says, well, why? And I says, well, having watched what you did last year, all I saw was you kicking people, giving away the ball, and booting the ball up in the air so high up front, it came down with a flight attendant on it. And I reckon that you'd get a good game, being rough and tough and playing high balls, you'd get a game in Scotland. I can recommend a couple of teams. Partick Thistle comes to mind. I said, so what we need from a fullback is someone that's got quality on the ball, doesn't panic, gets down the line, puts in crosses, and he's been doing that ever so well, outstanding against Sydney.
Yep.
In fact, so much so, I said to him, I said, you've played up front before. And he says, yeah, I used to play as a junior, as a number 10. I says, now you're getting carried away. You're back to fullback. But he's been, look, they've all impressed me, a lot of the youngsters, because I knew the senior players. I knew Daniel Georgeski and Nikolai and Nigel. I know all these boys and how they can play, and they're good players. So it's the young ones that either take the next step or they're too afraid and stay as kids. But they're all coming out of their shells big time.
So with Ivan, was that a simple coach of technique? It's just like technique
Good instruction? Question. Everyone thinks it's technique. If we're selecting players that don't have good technique, we've got the wrong team. We've got the wrong players. They've all pretty well physically good and technically good. It's really coaching at this level is more about tactics and movement and giving freedom. So defensively, this is your job. No creativity in defensive play. The last thing I want is someone beating players in our penalty box. Just get the ball out of there, preferably through the midfield forward, but sometimes long. But in attack, I give them a lot of freedom to be creative and to get into goal scoring positions, and I push an extra player forward, which means we're light at the back. But you play against a team that's got an extra player coming forward, five players coming forward, it's pretty hard to defend. But the risk is we get caught out, and that'll happen. And I remember at Victory, as many games we'd win 4-3 or 2-1 or 3-1, but it's exciting, and that's what the fans come to watch.
Just another question that came to mind while you were talking there. Say a bit about how important it was to bring more experience into the squad. Obviously, we've signed a lot of our recruitment this season has been a lot more experience. So Glenn Moss, Nikola Topor Stanley, players of this ilk, Roy O'Donovan, obviously. One of the feedback, I suppose, we got from previous coaches was that they thought that maybe there was not enough leaders on the pitch. There was too many kids, not necessarily, there was nobody vocal talking, and that was definitely evident in the stands.
Absolutely crucial. There's seven under 20s in the squad, including two boys that are scholarship players. Seven is ridiculous. You only need three in the 23 man squad. You only need three. We've got five. How many under-20s played in the grand final for Victory or Sydney? Probably not one. Oh, it was very, very hard for an under-20 to get a game. Plus, if you look at players under 24, 23 and under at our club, there's far too many players. If they had lots of experience in game time, fine.
Yeah.
But there's far too many young players. So it was crucial we brought in senior players up front where we last year you were struggling to score goals. So now we've got up front Roy O'Donovan, Dimi Petratos as senior players, and now Ronnie Vargas. So there's three up front. Down back, in the back line, the back four, bring in Georgescu on the right and Nikolai Topor-Stanley to partner Nigel, who partnered Lachlan most of last year, or Johnny Katrumbas. That's really tough. That's a crucial partnership. Now the two of them have been outstanding together because they can read the game really well. Left back, Jason, who's now injured, was competing with Ivan for the spot. And then to bring in another goalkeeper of the quality of Glenn Moss and experience, who's pushing Jack Duncan really well. So the experience was number one. I didn't sign Mario Chabot. That really came down to Joel and Laurie. But Mario Chabot and Joe Champness come in. They're really good quality players, and Costa Petrato. So we've got a really good mix now. We signed 10 new players, six of them are really experienced and four are high quality youngsters. Yep.
On the flip side of that, how does that impact the ongoing performance and of players like Lachlan Jackson and Jonathan Trimbers, who obviously performed as well as could be expected under fairly difficult circumstances when they were thrown in the deep end. Lachlan Jackson, I think, was and Katrumbas, no one really expected a great deal from them. But bringing those senior players in, how does that affect their ongoing development?
Benefits
and featuring
them enormously. But you, at one stage, I think you had three or four very young players playing. You can't win games with that many. You can only bring in one or two maximum at a time. I spoke about Lachlan earlier, and that's a good Scottish name, Lachlan. I've been teaching him how to pronounce it properly with a Loch. But Lachlan Jackson and Johnny Contrimus are two very good players. Lachlan is going to be, in my opinion, an outstanding centre-back. He's 6'12", he's lightning fast, and he's brave, and he's got a great left foot on him. And technically, he's very good. But now he'll be able to ease in, and when he does come in, because at some stage, Nigel or Nicolai will either get injured or suspended. And we're going to cut back red cards. I've had a word about that. But this boy will come in and he'll be with a much more mature back line and he'll play well, and he's been showing that. And he's been pushed now because he's one of these boys that just is just so lackadaisical in his approach to everything. It's just his personality. Now I've been stirring him up and causing a bit of trouble and pushing him hard, and he's turning into a much, much better player, especially on field with senior players around them.
So you're definitely finding bringing in more experienced players, not necessarily over the top of the youngsters, but it's given everybody the step up and leg.
Definitely over the top of youngsters. They've got to fight for their place now. There were too many players last year were walking, and it's not the coach's fault. I know Mark Johns. Mark Johns is a very good coach. 11 of the players that he had, I have moved on. He couldn't do that because they were under contract, etc. But he did a good job here. And he left a core of players that are very good. You know, Wayne Brown, I could go through them all. Yeah. Very good players. But there was too many youngsters. He didn't have an option. I've got an option. And now the senior players are coming in over them. They've got to fight for their place and earn a place even on the bench now.
Beautiful.
Bit of a lighter question.
Yes.
Your initiation to the club, your initiation with the team... what was your choice of song to sing to everyone? And
does the coach get to do that?
Does the coach have to do that? And of the new boys, what were some of the songs they sung? And who has a hidden talent, mate, for singing?
First of all, I've never sung. If you heard me sing, you would understand why. So I don't have to do that stuff. I think it's great for team building. And I've got no idea what the boys sing. I just remember Roy, when he sang, he did all the hand actions as well. And he was hilarious. He was gesticulating and gyrating and all the rest of it.
So
Sounds like the hokey pokey.
Yeah, whole effort into his song. He was terrific. And I think those initiation ceremonies are just fun. They're just fun. Yeah. And fun should never be at the expense of someone. And if someone is self-deprecating and wants to have a laugh about themselves, I think that's great. And that's the culture that we're trying to create here, a very positive ethical culture, which where excellence is important and winning is important, and what you need to do is train at the level you want to play at.
Cool. Well, if you want to do yours, I'll finish off with
Questions. The Northern New South Wales tour was completed this year again. What was a big takeaway for you from that trip?
Another thing that Laurie and I have tried to do is engage with the fans, not just in Newcastle but the surrounding areas. So we covered 800 Ks, we went up through Tyree and Port Macquarie. We had something like, I can't remember all the statistics, but we had over 4,000 at a game in Port Macquarie, 1,500 over in Tamworth. The clinics were all sold out, and they couldn't take any more, but the kids turned up anyway. We managed, and I think it was a major hit to make sure that we become visible and talk to people throughout this region, and no doubt something we're going to do ongoing. And Laurie and I are still going to corporate functions, and we're still doing clinics and getting out to schools, etc. But I'd like to do a clinic out at one of the really nice wineries. Preferably Scarborough.
Yeah, maybe a different sort of clinic.
There's definitely plenty to choose from.
A corporate function would be very good. No, I think it was great to see the number of fans that was really following our club, and was just loved the fact that we went up there and spent some time with them and coached them and played against the local teams, and one score blew out. But I had no idea who we were playing against. They wanted to play their best team rather than us take up another A-League team, and we beat them 16-0 or something. But I was giving them credit. I made sure that we played to the best standard right from the end to end. I didn't go soft on them, which would have been disrespectful. In fact, at one stage we think we had 9 players out, but the players come off and they said, look, you beat us, you thrash us, but we all got something out of it. It was just special to see. So I think that was just a very, very successful tour, as was going playing in the local Edgewater area, the Edgeworth Stadium in Magic Park, and all those clubs have helped us out as well with the facilities. And then we did a trip down to Canberra. So it's all been very important for us.
Just one question I've got before I ask the last one. The FFA Cup game was obviously a 1-0 loss against Adelaide, which were a bit of a surprise packet so far. Do you think that game maybe came a little bit too early for us? You'd only been around for a few weeks, maybe not had enough time to get the squad to gel. You think maybe if we'd have played that game a little bit later, we probably would have been able to make it through?
I think you're giving me lots of excuses there, but none are reasonable at all. We should have won that game. We actually played really good football.
Mm. Yeah, we did.
I don't know if you came to the game or saw it on
television. We were watching it.
We dominated possession. Yeah. They took their chance, 1-0. We should have taken our chances. I don't normally say much after a game, but I was pretty unhappy about that performance in front of goals. Mm. Not in at the back or in midfield. I just thought in front of goals we didn't do well. But it was probably something that we needed, just to remind ourselves that we need to get more and more players into goal-scoring positions. And I think the boys realise how serious I am about doing that. In fact, on Friday tomorrow, we're doing some videos, and what they don't realise is in the last training game we had the camera up above the goals that we were attacking, and I have an area called the red zone, and the red zone is a goal scoring area. It's between the 6-yard box and the penalty spot.
Yep.
And the boys are bored stiff and we're talking about the red zone, but the ball's got to get in the red zone and players have got to get in that red zone, and some of them are going to get hammered tomorrow when they see how few times they got into the red zone when the ball was in there. So mm-hmm. Adelaide pointed out the need to score goals. We were outplayed when we played the Mariners. We were actually outplayed. It wasn't a case of dominating the game and losing. We were outplayed 2-0, but we took a lot out of that as well. We didn't have our best team out, but neither did they. But we took a lot from that, and then the next 3 A-League games we played, we won. And in fact, we've hardly lost a game since. Mm. But so everything's not. You don't make mistakes. It's learning situations, and it's a lesson to be learned. As long as they're learning the lesson, this is how you score goals, this is what's needed, and it all adds to your coaching. If you win every game pre-season, I'd be a bit worried going into the start of the league. So I was very disappointed we didn't win that game though against Adelaide.
Any opportunities for one Jay Griffiths to be helping out with striker training?
Joel, I took Joel to over to Wellington Phoenix, and he did a really good job for me. And it was when he did his knee, we struggled for the second half of that season. In fact, we finished third that year. The next year, I lost all the strikers. We sold Nathan Burns to Tokyo. Joel was out permanently because of his knee reconstruction. And the final one, Roy Krishna, did his ankle, was out for 14 weeks. Yeah. So we were, next season, we struggled big time again.
No one's
helping. Joel Griffiths is a good operations manager, and we'll keep him there. He's doing a very good job. He cost me a bottle of champagne, though, when he got Ronald over the line. So Ronald better score goals, because it cost me money, and being Scottish, I want value for money.
All right. Final question. Obviously, we have to end it with PV4, considering he's submitted a whole bunch of them. Ignoring all other achievements, what do you have minimum requirements for your ladder position for the club for the upcoming season? Is it reasonable for fans to have a minimum expectation of finishing in the finals? From a coach and CEO perspective, we consider anything less than sixth place a failure. Obviously, this is not our question.
It's okay.
And how will you react if we don't manage to get finals football this season?
Well, first of all, I don't set the goals and objectives for the season. The players, we met with a group called facilitators called Momentum, who work with corporations, and they were terrific. They come in, they set the challenges for the boys. They ask the boys, these are your challenges, what do you want to do, where do you want to finish? And the outcome goals for the players was to finish in the top three. Mm-hmm. The outcome goals, as far as I'm concerned, was getting the top six, and we'll take it from there, but they want to finish in the top three. Of course, once you decide on what outcome you want, then you've got to decide what you've got to do to get there, how hard you've got to train, the commitment you've got to have, 2-3 double sessions, pre-season, train the day before practice games, train the day of practice games, play the practice game, train the next day, and that sort of commitment. Then on field, they've all got stats to make, distances of cover, 11Ks for midfielders plus, distances at intensity over 20 kilometres, number of passes in midfield, they've got to have between 40, 50 passes to 60, 70 midfielders, 85% success rate. So they're getting feedback on physical, technical and tactical stats all the time, getting the ball into the danger area, red zone, number of shots they have on target. So they've got stats and they've been working towards those, and they get feedback all the time. So they set their challenges. I've said to them, if they want to finish in the top three, they've got to get 48 points. And the good thing about that is I think we can lose in 9 or 10 games. So you've got to understand that you can't win every game, but you can play to win every game.
Yeah.
And the boys are pretty keen to get into that top three. I'll be happy with the top six and we'll take it from there. Because then you've got to take stock and say, how many are out injured? How many are suspended? What's the opposition like? But I think this team will definitely be it will be a failure if we don't get in the top six. What will I do then? That's not my decision. That's up to Martin Lee, what happens after then.
Beautiful. All right. Well, we have to thank everybody for submitting their questions, and we really have to thank Ernie for volunteering his time and answering them, and being very in-depth, I think, and giving a great deal of information and feedback on those questions. So thank you very much for joining us on the podcast, Danny Merrick.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Well, I'm down, Benjamin!